At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
A factual data creation facility production.
Recorded live in front of a computer screen, it's the OFNT podcast. Now here's your host, who's been drowning in fitness data as of late, Jim Schaefer.
Welcome to episode 280, which I'm calling Dog Days of August.
What does that saying even mean? I'm asking for a friend here.
I don't know, but it sure does sound cool. Well, I've got some tech news for you, and still not a full load of it, and the usual stuff. So I'll just cut to the chase and get things started now.
Oh, yes.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
Tech news. I'll get the Apple stuff out of the way first.
Okay.
9to5Mac.com, quoting an unnamed analyst, is reporting that Apple will charge an additional $50 for all the new iPhone models this year.
How dare you?
Except for the base model iPhone 17.
I guess the giant fruit company is making up the loss of revenue from not receiving payment by Google for making them the default search engine on Apple devices. We're talking billions of dollars here.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. And I also think you should lay off the caffeine, if you know what I mean. Of course, the article blames the current administration's 20% tariffs on Chinese-made goods for this price increase, not mentioning the loss of revenue from Google. Though Apple has started ramping up iPhone production in India, Chinese government interference has stalled the plan to supply the North American market with Indian-manufactured iPhones. So this year, consumers will have to open up their wallets a little wider if they want a new iPhone. The oft-criticized iPhone 16e is steadily gaining traction, capturing some 11% of U.S. iPhone sales last quarter, which doubles the iPhone SE share from the same time last year. AppleInsider.com has an article stating that Apple has finally hit on a more sustainable, low-cost approach than the SE series. I think they're correct at that. In the past, Apple sold older generations of iPhones to cost-conscious buyers, while the SE models were for those that didn't care or who couldn't afford to care about the latest and greatest iPhones. But Apple noticed a trend where older generation iPhone sales were declining year on year. Hence the iPhone 16e. The 16e is basically an iPhone made from older hardware but filled with modern processors. A stripped-down iPhone 16, if you will. The article predicts an iPhone 17e to be released next May, and a new model to be released every May after that. The danger here is that the E series costs a couple of $100 more than the SE series did, shutting out those that can't afford or refuse to pay more than the old SE's price. These buyers may turn to the used market or to Android.
Gasp! Heaven forbid!
Again, I must point out that one of the all-time best-selling iPhones was the iPhone XR, which the 16e kind of resembles.
Yes!
Eventually, the E series will have all or most of the features that I desire, like the dynamic island and 120Hz display refresh rate, and I'll mostly opt for that model rather than splurge on the high-end models with features that I seldom, if at all, use. One of the few Apple products that I'm really looking forward to is a new Apple TV streaming box. Supposedly, the price of one of these boxes will actually be decreasing this time around.
Sounds very
un-Apple to these ears.
You sound like you should work at NPR. Well, there might be a reason for this price decrease. According to MacRumors.com, this new Apple TV box will get a new, more powerful chip with more powerful graphics performance and an Apple-designed Wi-Fi chip, which will improve Wi-Fi reception.
Yay!
What I'm saying is it'll basically be the same box with just the internals being upgraded. The expected price is to be $100 for the base model. Well, if you want more RAM, expect Apple to tack on $50 more. But that's still a lower price than the current models. However, there have been rumors that Apple will be adding a camera to at least one version of the Apple TV box.
Now, what's the point of having a camera on a television streaming box?
Well, for making and answering FaceTime video and audio calls. Last year, Apple added this capability to their streaming boxes. You can only use FaceTime in conjunction with an iPhone, though. So why bother using FaceTime on your television? So if true, this model will probably set you back close to $200. I do have a hole to poke in this rumor, though. What about audio? There's been no mention of a microphone being added to the Apple TV box. Now, there is one built into its remote, but who wants to have to hold a remote to your mouth during a video call? Unless Apple plans on upgrading the remote's built-in mic so it would be able to just be in front of you while you spoke, say placed on a coffee table to work. I'd rather the new Apple TV box have a USB-C port able to support like a webcam that you can mount on or at least near your television for making or receiving video calls. Well, time will tell, won't it? In good news for Google, the Pixel phone brand has picked up market share recently, increasing by 13% year over year. This makes the Pixel the number 4 ranked smartphone in the U.S. smartphone market. That may be so, but I still have never seen a Pixel phone in the wild. Then again, I'm not out and about as much as I used to be. I'd probably have a better chance of seeing one if I still resided up in New York, though. Perhaps with Google switching from Samsung to TSMC for their Tensor chip manufacturer, we'll give the Pixel line a boost in performance and battery life, and that will translate into a larger share of the market. I've always admired the design of the Pixel phone and could see myself using one and entering the Google ecosystem.
Oh, stop it. You're so deep into Apple's walled garden ecosystem that you'd never be able to leave it.
Eh, you're probably right about that. But who knows? Apple may go out of business one day.
No.
Eh, who am I kidding? That won't happen in my lifetime. And with Google giving up on Chrome OS, I have no desire to enter that ecosystem anyway. Android is not a true desktop operating system, no matter how hard Google tries to make it one. One day I'll own a Pixel phone once again. It'll be a non-current model, probably an A series. I'll use it to keep an eye on Android developments. And speaking of Chrome OS, 9to5 Google is reporting that Microsoft's competitor to Chrome OS, Windows 11 SE, is to be discontinued. Windows SE was introduced back in 2021 and was designed for low-cost laptops. Like Chrome OS is married to your Google account, Windows SE was linked to your Microsoft 365 account, and everything had to be synced to your OneDrive. Unlike Chrome OS, traditional Windows apps were unsupported. Everything had to be part of Windows 365. Another problem with Windows SE was that all apps operated in full screen mode, like an old iPad did. Still, I think it was a good idea that just didn't get enough attention from Microsoft. No further updates are coming for Windows SE, and support will stop in October. I remember Microsoft announcing a business product for Windows SE. I think it was just last year. It was a small square box attached to a keyboard and monitor that had a user log into it using either their personal Microsoft 365 account or the account that their office had assigned to them. I can see businesses doing this and saving a heap of money, especially government offices, which run on Microsoft 365 these days, and I'm speaking from experience here. Using Windows SE could enable the government to get rid of most of their IT people. When I worked for the government, we used Dell mini PCs, which would malfunction on the regular. They just weren't able to handle the constant usage they were subjected to. I was also thinking if we had these Windows SE-like clients boxes instead of the Dell mini PCs, I could have avoided the cat-and-mouse games I was always playing with the IT department in order to use my personal 365 account. Especially OneDrive on my government-issued computer. Then again, I did have fun doing that. Tech I'm using. I've ignored the public betas for all the new associated Apple operating systems. Or did I? Well, somewhat. Normally I'd jump aboard Apple public betas when they first become available. Or maybe wait for the second release before installing them on my various Apple devices. This year, I decided to just wait until at least the final release candidate, but I must confess, I've been tempted to bite the bullet and download them for all my devices. Friday afternoon, I decided to download iPad OS 26 for my iPad Pro. The reason for this decision is that iPad OS 26 brings the most changes of all the other operating systems. My iPad, though I spend a lot of time using it, is not mission critical for me. That title would go to my Mac Mini, which I use, amongst other things, to record and edit this podcast. Though I'm looking forward to checking out the Mac getting a full-blown phone app, I can't afford some other app like my digital audio workstation or the software that powers my audio interface and audio plugins to not function properly. Oh, the fully functional phone app is present on my iPad, thanks to iPad OS 26. My first impressions of iPad OS 26...
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it kind of is. Or that its user interface is not a radical change from the current iPad OS. It's more like window dressing. I've heard that Apple dialed back the liquid glass aesthetic because of user feedback, so that's probably why it's not a shock to the system. The one thing that I'm really impressed with so far is the ability to resize app window sizes a la Mac OS. Before, you could split the display in order to run two apps side by side, but that was about it. You couldn't resize the app's windows to just any size you wanted. Now, I haven't played around with the iPad enough to explore other features, but I'll get around to it. Supposedly, you can now use a Bluetooth mouse and actually have an arrow-shaped pointer.
Whoa!
And all the functions of a real computer mouse. Before, you got a black circle to control with limited functionality. Who knows, I might even put the public beta on my iPhone and Apple Watch next week. I've had my Peloton bike for some 8 months now.
Oh, here we go again.
Though I'd been using the Peloton app with another brand of indoor cycle since November of 2021, excluding a short lapse in 2024, one of the reasons that I decided to purchase a Peloton, besides being a proponent of connected fitness, was to participate in live cycling classes. During the bad days of the pandemic,
China,
my lovely wife was stranded in the Philippines and I at home. That was due to a work injury. Before the lockdowns, I had used the gym at work mostly for cardio, utilizing the treadmill or the elliptical machine. I did my strength training at home with kettlebells and free weights. Well, I tore my right shoulder's rotator cuff at work and elected to not undergo surgery, but rehab to heal. I had no means of cardio at home at the time, and of course, couldn't strength train because of my shoulder injury. Isolated and bored, I started seeing commercials on television for Peloton, which featured people taking live classes and having at least some sort of interaction with other human beings. When I checked the now inflated prices for Peloton and the very long ship dates for the bike, I was dissuaded from purchasing one. Instead, I watched television and slept through the pandemic China. Until the lockdowns were over. And doing so caused me to put on some serious poundage. When things started returning to normal, I purchased a Soul brand indoor cycle whose price had gone down and subscribed to the Peloton app. I used my iPad as a display and took cycling classes before going to work. On days off, I would take the live classes. I worked the overnight shift with rotating days off, but it didn't matter. There was always a live Peloton cycling class scheduled for a convenient time for me, usually out of Peloton's London studios. Eventually, I switched shifts to working 1400 to 2200.
That's 2 in the afternoon until 10 in the evening for you civilians out there.
Since retiring, for some reason, I've kept this same schedule.
Can you please do us all a favor and get to the point here?
Patience, please. Anyway, while re-entering the Peloton ecosystem, this time armed with a Peloton bike, I've noticed a large drop-off of both live and pre-recorded cycling classes. Most live classes for cycling are scheduled in the very early mornings and early afternoons. I remember when I could catch a live ride at 2 in the morning from the London studios. Live cycling classes seem to end in the afternoon, picking up in the early mornings. Treadmill classes have become the most numerous these days. I guess I shouldn't complain. Those that bought the very expensive rowing machine have even less live classes than cycling classes. Peloton is becoming an everything for everybody ecosystem now. Seems like they cater most to those who use the app without the Peloton equipment. I sort of feel betrayed by this company shift. What's the benefit of owning Peloton hardware at this point? If I would have known this going in, I would have just purchased a club-quality cycle, mounted a 32-inch television on my wall, and used the Peloton app. The initial expense would have been slightly more, but the savings long-term would have been significant.
Phew. I'm glad that's over with, aren't you?
You know what? I am. Entertainment news. Well, recently I reported that the U.S. Congress had finally cut off taxpayer funds going to the Public Broadcasting Service, PBS, and National Public Radio, NPR. PBS, NPR, and their supporters would always bring up the fact that taxpayer funds only accounted for 1% of their budget. Well, of course, that wasn't true. Well, maybe on paper it was, as PBS and NPR received taxpayer funds indirectly from non-governmental organizations, such as the corrupt USAID, which are mostly funded by U.S. taxpayers.
But we already knew this.
Public media's original charter included bringing balanced news to its audience, balance being the key word here. And that's something it hasn't done since the late 1990s, by my estimations, where it began becoming the mouthpiece for the Democratic Party. Public media knew where the money was coming from, and in return, paid back its benefactor. An example of this is the day after President Trump defeated Kamala Harris in the last election, NPR had a special program where its hosts had a literal cry fest. Yes, some hosts were really crying on air over the outcome of the election. They just couldn't understand how their candidate of choice, Harris, had lost this election. In the end, they blamed themselves for not properly, quote, informing, unquote, their listeners as the reason. Well, first of all, this cry fest totally exposed NPR's bias. Secondly, their shrinking audience isn't nearly as large as they think it is. According to Deadline.com, as well as other sources, the organization that handed taxpayer money over to PBS and NPR, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, is shuttering its doors September 30th, with a complete shutdown of all operations January 26th of 2026. Recently, public media lobbyists attempted to get funding promises for after the current administration's tenure, but Congress countered with a bill that would prohibit funding for public media for the foreseeable future. So with this defunding and clampdown on NGOs, there is no need for the CPC. PBS and NPR will actually have to compete in the media market for listeners. I think we'll be seeing layoffs, salary reductions, and cost-cutting measures occurring within the bloated PBS and NPR real soon now. In my opinion, it's been a long time coming.
Perhaps there's a chance that I could be hired by National Public Radio. You won't find a better announcer than myself, at least one with an accent such as the one I possess.
Now it's my turn to say, keep dreaming. Another month and another price increase for streaming services. MGM Plus announced a price increase Friday, which will see its yearly subscription price increase by $3. Well, Saturday, Peacock announced that their yearly subscription price will increase by $30.
What the hell?
Well, I subscribe to both services.
Of course you do.
And I must admit, I don't watch either very much these days. I watch MGM Plus a bit more, and because of that and their more moderate price increase, I'll be keeping them. Peacock, on the other hand, is now dead to me. I've been a subscriber to that service a very long time. I used to pay $30 per year, then $50, then $79. This is the ad-supported tier, mind you. With this latest increase, the price will be $110 before tax, and that's just not worth it. The only show I currently watch on Peacock is Twisted Metal, and I can live without it. The whole streaming thing has gotten way out of hand. The streaming service I watch the most often is Paramount Plus. I was getting the service for free thanks to my Walmart Plus membership, but that was only for the first year. With Walmart Plus, I'll be paying $65 per year, and that's the ad-free tier. One show and its spin-offs that both my lovely wife and I enjoy are the Dexter series. Over last winter, it was Dexter Original Sin, which is a prequel to the old original Dexter. And this summer, we have Dexter Resurrection, which sees Dexter in New York City up to his old tricks while protecting his son, who's the only family he has left in this world. If you aren't familiar with Dexter, the character is a serial killer that kills other serial killers. If you're interested in watching any of the Dexter shows, I'd recommend starting with the original series and moving on from there. That will give you something to watch through the whole upcoming winter. I know that I had recommended the Prime Video Bosch spinoff Ballard last week, but now I'm withdrawing that recommendation, now that I've watched a few more episodes of it. The series seems to be more concerned with the history of the women characters and how they've been wronged. And males, especially Caucasian males, are portrayed as being insane, stupid, or evil, and perhaps all three. The only Caucasian male that gets good treatment here happens to be gay. Sound familiar?
Yes.
I've come to realize that Ballard is not a show aimed at my demographic. No, this one is squarely aimed at what's called the modern audience. Though the original Bosch series creators are listed as producers of Ballard, the writers are all new and female, most likely fresh out of college and supporting septum piercings. Yeah, I actually looked through the credits of both Bosch and Ballard to confirm this fact.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Podcast news. Well, last week I told you that I had ordered a 3.5 millimeter TRS to USB-C cable in an attempt to connect my phone to my Lewitt Connect 6 audio interface. Previously, I tried to do this using the mobile device input on my interface, which connected via USB-C. After a frustrating, I think it was 3 weeks, I discovered that the mobile input on the interface didn't work properly, and that's a known defect of the device. The cable I ordered actually showed up Saturday afternoon, but I hadn't gotten the chance to test it out before recording last week's episode. I did test it out Monday afternoon, and guess what? It worked perfectly.
Yay!
I can now record media directly from my phone and, of course, can now have guests phone in for interviews and whatnot. I'm still in the market for a new audio interface, though. But this fix gives me some breathing room for deciding what interface to purchase in the future. Right now, it's between the Rode Rodecaster Duo and a PreSonus Quantum ES2. The Rode unit has all the bells and whistles I desire, including onboard digital signal processing, DSP, but at a price. The PreSonus has better quality preamps and latency, but no DSP, unfortunately. When I get around to it, I'll play around with the noise gate plugin that I downloaded last week to see if I can get it to work better. I might even look into purchasing one. If I can get the plugin to work nearly as well as the Lewitt's built-in noise gate, I'll be leaning towards the PreSonus, but like I've previously said, I now have some breathing room. Continuing with the exciting subject of audio interfaces.
Exciting for you, perhaps, not us.
To each their own. I went down a rabbit hole searching for what's available these days. The amount of choices is dizzying. Most audio interfaces are made for musicians' home studios and have features that I don't want nor need. At one point, I was attempting to justify an $800 interface because of its ability to run digital plugins on board without using your computer CPU. Amongst the large amount of available plugins available for this unit was a noise gate, which was the only thing I really needed. Thank goodness I eventually snapped out of it and decided against this particular device. I was then set on the SSL2 because A, it was made in Oxford, England, the city where I resided just outside of, back in what I refer to as being the day. And B, rave reviews from just about everyone on YouTube. And C, it was very affordable.
Cheapo.
The SSL unit doesn't have digital signal processing, but I have a bunch of digital plugins on hand to get around that. Same goes for the PreSonus ES2 rig, which looks much more modern than the SSL and gets high marks from YouTube reviewers. The PreSonus does have a auto gain setting feature, but that's something that would take me less than 1 minute to accomplish on my own. Finally, there's the Beacon Studio. It was designed by the same team behind the popular Go XLR interface. This thing resembles a very small pocketbook and only has one knob to control it. Its secret lies in the accompanying software. The cost is great for what it can do, but quality issues with the hardware gave me pause. With my Lewitt Connect 6 working the way I want it to now, there's no hurry to get a new interface. Anyway, I'll most likely stick with the Connect 6 and eventually get a Rode Rodecaster Duo. Rode just dropped a firmware update that gives the Duo the ability to talk over the internet to other Rodecasters and automatically set up a dedicated audio channel. If the other party does not have a Rodecaster, you can just send them a link which will serve the same function. And if the Rodecaster is good enough for the Podfather, well, it's good enough for me. And now for some real podcast news. According to podnews.net, podcast hosting company RSS.com has launched PAID, P-A-I-D, which stands for Programmatic Ads Inserted Dynamically.
Clever.
This, of course, is nothing new. But what is new is all RSS.com customers with 10 or more downloads per month are eligible for these inserted ads.
Wow.
Normally, the download cutoff is much higher in order for a podcast to be eligible for ads. My hosting company, RedCircle.com, was a trailblazer at this, notably allowing shows to run ads with 100 or more downloads per month. Before RedCircle.com, hosting services required that shows had to have 1,000 or more downloads per month in order to qualify for advertising.
Whoa!
That's why on certain podcasts, you'll hear the host say, "We'll be back after this ad break," and nothing happens. After a second, the podcast continues with no ads. This means the show's downloads have fallen below the threshold for ad insertion. RSS.com guarantees a minimum payout of $1 per month, and states that podcasters typically earn 70% of the revenue from ads. I've gotten ad revenue payments of less than $1 per month.
What?
And I believe I split ad revenue 50-50 with my hosting company, if even that. You know, I just might take a look at RSS.com in the future. Well, the music is playing as the episode winds down. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be greatly appreciated. You can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com, and that's only if you're so inclined. I'd enjoy hearing from you. Yeah, I really would. Remember, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. Hey, have you noticed my new fence?
Sans the gates.
Yeah, that's a story for another time. Anyway, just get off my lawn. Stay skeptical. I'm out.
See ya.
And that, folks, is the end of the show.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.